tear. They shouldn't make tears on their heads. Says Rashi al hamez, meaning as an expression of grief. So Rashi is bothered. The whole pasuk was something related to how people reacted to death, for the grief when a relative died. So Rashi is bothered. Why does the Torah mention it here concerning Kohanim when the law applies even for a regular Jew? All those things that you're not allowed to do as an expression of too much grief for the loss of a relative is the same whether you're a Kohen or you're an Israel. So Rashi says, Lo yikrechu korcho al meis. So for as Rashi, Lo yaf Israel uzeru al kach. So why is the Kohen different than a regular Jew? So from the answer, so what's bothering Rashi? What's bothering Rashi is, so why is it mentioned twice? Once by a Jew, once by a Kohen? So Rashi answers, no, because there are certain details in the law that we learn out from a Kohen that we didn't know by a Jew. But it's true, it applies to both equally. Right? This is what Rashi says. V'yilmedu Yisrael mekoyenim igzera shoveh. Because it says here korcho, and it says by the Jews korcho, makan kol ha'roish. The same way we see by a Kohen, it means any part of the head. So by a Jew, also any part of the head, even though it doesn't say it. So Rashi is only bothered by the fact of, so what do we learn out new? But Rashi doesn't address itself to another problem. Fine, so we learn now from Kohen something that applies to all Jews. So why mention it by a Kohen? Obviously, the Torah chose the Kohen to mention it by. And it doesn't mean because the law applies only to a Kohen, because we know it applies equally to a regular Jew. So then there must be another reason why the Torah mentioned it by a Kohen. Now, it's mentioned in the Sefer Achinuch and in the Moire Nebuchim, in all the Sforim that talk about Taimi HaMitzvahs. It's mentioned, and it's really it's brought down in Midrashim. What is the reason behind the mitzvah? Why aren't you allowed to show too much grief for the loss of a relative? Why? Why isn't a Jew allowed to show too much grief? Only grief to a limited degree, not too much. Why not? What? Partially it's correct because of the acceptance of Hashem's judgment, but there is a stronger reason, a reason of emunah. What?
Olam Haba.
Because it contradicts Olam Haba. Because too much grief expresses the thought of a state which is eternal, and we believe that death is a temporary state. Okay, this really it's mentioned in the Midrash.
What if a person is a Russia gum who dies?
A regular Russia, a regular average Russia, is 12 months.
Yeah.
After that, it gets over my bone. No problem. It's in that much of a Russia. You're right. I mean, it's so the idea is then. The belief in the temporary nature of death. Now, if you remember what we spoke about yesterday, that the Kohanim that were assigned to the Jews at the moment that Jews became mortal, remember, Jews became mortal according to the Midrash by the golden calf. At that moment, Jews became mortal.
Right.
Who became the leader of the Jewish people at that point? The Kohanim. Right? It coincides. The Jewish mortality and the Kohen's assignment, right, and is both at the same time. That's why we say that the most important task of the Kohen is the fight against death. Yes? That's why the Kohen symbolically has to distance himself to death as much as possible, to the point that the Kohen God has to distance himself to death even from his closest relatives, right? That's what he says. So now it makes sense then why it's mentioned by Akohen. Who is more responsible, more than anybody else, to show that death is only a temporary state? That's exactly what the Akohen is here for, to make from death only a temporary state, right? Meaning, the goal of the Kohen is to bring about Chiyas HaMeisim. You know, it's a return of the pre-golden calf state. That's the goal of the Kohen. And since this is the mitzvah that represents that belief, it's very proper that this mitzvah should be said by a Kohen. You understand? So this is why the Torah chose the Kohen to mention it by. Because it's, this is the main job of the Kohen, to teach the lesson that the mitzvah expresses. The belief that death is a temporary situation. That's what the Kohanim are for. Okay? Death, right, represents a breakdown, right, in man's relation to God. Remember, in a state of kodem hachet, there is no death. Meaning, when the relationship between man and God, between Odom Orishon and God, is in a state of perfection, Odom never dies, because his relationship to God is so close that it maintains his life, and he can never die. It's an eternal state. Death only comes about when there is a breakdown in that relationship. Okay? Cohen is here to show us that we have to go back to a pre Egel Azov state. Now, it's in a state when Jews were, like what the Midrash says, the Gemara says, Heirus. Heirus mina malach hamoved. The Gemara says, Al tikre chorus. The words of the Ten Commandments were chorus ala luchos, inscribed in the luchos. Says the Gemara, Al tikre chorus elo Heirus. Says the Gemara, Heirus mina malach hamoved. Free from death. Meaning that during the 40 days between Matan Torah and the Golden Calf, Jews were free from death. Now, the next halacha of the Kohen, the next restriction of the Kohen, besides distancing from death, there is another halacha, Pasuk Zion. Isho zono v'chalolo lo yikochu, v'isho grusho m'isho lo yikochu. Now, zono v'chalolo, we can understand. Zono has to do with a sin. Why? Because according to Rashi brings down, who is Zono? Any woman who has a relationship that is also for her. For instance, a Jewish woman who lived with a Gentile becomes also to marry a Kohen. Why? Because since she's not allowed to marry a Gentile, that ushers her from marrying a Kohen forever. That's a Zono.
Well, she has a relationship with a Jew.
What about if she's a relation with a Jew? Doesn't pass her from a Kohen. Why?
That's a stupid
deal. Why? It's not a forbidden relationship.
Before marriage?
Before marriage, the circumstances are prohibited. Not the relationship is prohibited. Here's the difference.
A little.
No, it's a very important difference. You see, because the Nakamina is that any illegal relationship, right, has the produce, in other words, the child suffers from a legal relationship, but an illegal situation, like before marriage, then the children are 100% kosher, don't suffer at all.
You mean they're not mamzer?
In other words, not only aren't they mamzer, they're not halolim, they're not zono, nothing. You understand what I mean? Which means the woman is not a zono, nothing. Which means like this. Marriage is only a mitzvah, right, that legalizes, right, a potentially legal relationship. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
But the relationship per se is not illegal. It's lacking the certification. Therefore, the child is a kosher child. It can be a Kohen Gadol. Right? If it's a girl, she can marry a Kohen Gadol. It makes absolutely no difference. However, if a Jewish woman will live with a Gentile, even with Kiddushin, she's not allowed to live with a Gentile.
There is no Kiddushin by a Gentile.
Exactly. There is no Kiddushin by a Gentile. Or, what about she will live with her brother, right? Or she will live with a mamzer, right? There is kiddushin by a mamzer, but it's an illegal kiddushin. Okay, so that's why the child will be called a so she will be called a zoner. right? Mm-hmm. So Zonah has a relationship with sin. It's very natural that Kohanim that represent purity, right, should not marry women that there is a relationship to sin. Zono, right, in that relationship with sin. Chalolo, Chalolo, says Rashi, she herself, the girl, she didn't commit any sin, but she's the product of a sinful relationship. For instance, a Kohen that marries a divorcee, the child is called a Chalolo. So even though she herself, there's nothing wrong with her, but she's the product of a sinful relationship, a Kohen has to separate himself even from such a relationship to sin. But Gerusho, divorcee mm-hmm. makes no sense. It's interesting.
What? Chalolo. What? She's the product of a divorce.
For instance, a illegal relationship of a Kohen. A Kohen married a Gerusho. A Kohen Godel marries an Almono.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Any illegal relationship related to Kehuno, the product is called a Chalolo, and she cannot marry a Kohen anymore.
Kosher
doesn't affect, again, because Nido halachically, we're not talking about the Kabbalistic, but halachically Nido is not something wrong with the relationship. It's the circumstances were wrong, right? But not the relationship. You understand what I mean? The relationship. There's nothing wrong with this man and this woman living together. It's just the situation now is wrong.
The Torah
does
not apply to a Jewish woman and a Jewish man having premarital relations.
No, not at all.
When it says in the Torah, there shall be no harlotry in your land, that's referring to the illegal
relationship. Well, that's a question. That's a question whether Loisia Kadesho, whether it means there is a mandoma that says that is an issue to live without marriage. Right? It's an issue that arises according to one mandoma. The Rambam doesn't pass him that way. The Rambam says it's a woman who has an illegal relationship, or according to Rambam, it's also when you assign a concubine. According to Rambam, a concubine is prohibited, right? But you notice that there are some Rishonim who hold that a concubine is permitted. What is a concubine? You're miyachet without kedushin. According to Rambam. Right? A Jew, separates a woman and says, I'm only going to live with you, and they don't get married. According to some, there is no transgression, right? You're not being mekayim the mitzvah of kedushin, but there's not.
But it's also another one.
According to some Rishonim, no. According to some Rishonim, we find pilakshim in the Torah. It's not even also another one. According to some Rishonim, okay. The pshat is that it's osur because. We pass them that's already considered kedeshah. The Rambam passes that's considered loisia kedeshah. There is a issue with the rights, and only a king is allowed to have concubines. Is the Rambam's position? Only a king. Why? Why only a king? It's a beautiful story. Why only a king? The Rosh says it. Why only a king? Okay. What is the reason for kedushin? What is the reason that it should be only yours? Right? By a king, there is a law that if he uses a chair, nobody's allowed to use the chair ever again. You know this law?
Mm-hmm.
Any instrument that the king uses becomes prohibited to the whole world, whether it's a chair, a table, a pencil, a book, anything.
It's from a kedushin.
So it's automatic kedushin. It's kedushin without kedushin. This is why the Rambam passes that pilegesh, a concubine, is permitted for a king, because whatever we gain by kedushin, which is a separation, it's already gained by the king.
Why does the king have kedushin?
So kedushin exists because he's a Jew, but it's not necessary for him. He can never be legate.
Doesn't have to worry about
right. The nafkamina
is no longer pilegish.
What?
Who?
She would lose the category of kedushin. She would be married.
Yeah, but he didn't go through the process of kedushin. For instance, she would need a ksuve. I mean, all those things that come out from the actual going through the process of kedushin, she doesn't have. But she will actually be usher to anybody else, right?
How comes Avraham has a concubine?
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, you know what the Rambam says, Kodem Matan Torah, Poga Isho Bashuk, and he says before the Torah, it's different, number one. Number two, you know what the Midrash says? That the whole world, right, chose Avraham as a king. He says that. Avraham, the Av is the notion of kingdom. How am I going? What? So says the Shemish Shmuel. The Shemish Shmuel is bothered of, with divorcee. What is the idea of divorcee? So I saw, I think they say for Achinuch and the others, they say, well, because in people's perception, divorce is a flaw, and therefore, since we demand from the Kohen perfection. I mean, of course, maybe in a superficial level that would be sufficient, but right? But you need something more substantial in order to understand why the Torah asks Kedusha. So the Shem Yishmuel says like this. Says like this: we find that the Torah restricts the Kohen concerning two things: his relationship with Nisa, death, and the relationship with Ishus, who is allowed to marry. Why? What's the idea behind it? So he says like this: it all goes back to the Eitz Hadas. Why? The idea is like this: we find by the Eitz Hadas a very interesting thing. When Chava eats from the Eitz Hadas, she gives it to Adam. So first of all, how does she agree to eat the Eitz Hadas? She has to be convinced by the serpent. The serpent works so hard to get her to accept, right, that he finally succeeds. Right. Now, remember, why doesn't the serpent go to Adam? So the Gemara says, because somehow Chava is more susceptible to being convinced by the serpent. Okay? In other words, you can't very easily convince Adam, right? As a matter of fact, even if you work hard, you can't convince Adam. So look what happens. Chava eats, she goes over to Adam, and what happens? He eats right away. Does he argue with her? Doesn't argue with her. What's going on?
He just says he does.
What do you mean? The argument, what do you mean?
It's a
conversation.
She persuades him with some effort.
Okay, but he accepts it. He accepts it. In other words, the Nochosh, which is the symbolism of evil, right, won't be able to convince it. Chava can convince it. What's the idea behind that? Now, what does Chava give Adam? That we know. Rashi says it on the spot, in braces. Why does Chava give Adam? Because she says, obviously, she'll have to pay a price for having eaten the Eitz Hadas. Right? That I should suffer the price, and he shouldn't. Let us both die or whatever. Right? In other words, Chava becomes selfish, right, when after eating the Eitz Hadas. Now, listen to this. In the ideal state of the relationship between men and women, there is no actual differentiation between men and women. The sense of I am doing it or you are doing it makes no sense. If any one of us is doing something, we are both doing something. Remember the Gemara. The Gemara says, according to one man, the Omar, that Adam and Chava were created together. Not like it's like everybody learns simple pshat that Adam was born and God took out a rib. According to Chazal, the word tselo, rib, doesn't necessarily mean rib, tselo. It means a side, which means Adam and Chava were created as an androgynous entity, like a combination of men and women, and what God did was separate them both. So, you know, Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara says that they were both created together. What's the idea of their original creation together? Because that represents the goal. Sof Maaseh B'Machshavot Tchilo. The goal is the complete unity. So even after they were separated, right? So maybe physically there was a separation, but there was a complete unity, which means like this: the moment one of them becomes convinced, right, there is no such a thing as so she will eat it and he won't. eventually he left to eat it too, because it's all one. So what about her? But she decided, she became selfish. But when did she become selfish? After she ate. Why did he accept? Because he accepted before he ate. You understand what I mean? Which means like this. In the ideal situation, meaning without the chet, Odom Orishon Kodem HaChet had a perfect relationship with Chava, because they created, they were part of the Zivug, that perfect Zivug. Okay? Yes? The breakdown happened after the sin. True? Now,
after she ate.
After she ate, that's when the breakdown started. She was able to convince him, but what made him accept? If the Nochosh wasn't able to convince him, Chavo for sure not. Chavo can't be more powerful than the Nochosh itself, which is the source of evil. So how does he become convinced from Chavo and he wouldn't become convinced from the Nochosh? Because Chavo and Odom are one.
That means, what did I say to him to eat the fruit? The minute she ate the fruit, he sinned as well.
So in reality, his eating of the fruit is a natural extension of her eating of the fruit. But don't forget that by her eating from the fruit, she automatically broke away from Odom. The process of breaking away without his knowledge had already started.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So
his eating is just the final breakdown. You understand what I mean? Which means like this. The breakdown in human relationship, right, is a direct result of the sin. In other words, the chet Odom v'chavo is number one, a breakdown in the relationship between men and God that results in death, right? And a breakdown between men and men that in its direct form was a breakdown in the relationship between Chavo and Odom. Right? Comes out according to this. That when we talk about the rectification of the sin of Adam, the results are twofold. Number one, there is a result in the relationship between men and God that will make men immortal again. Yes? And there is another result. The relationship among human beings will change it. We will recognize our natural unity, which in its original form was the unity between Odom and Chavo. Remember, Odom and Chavo represent the unity of all mankind. They are the sum total of all human beings, Odom and Chavo, right? But the awareness of that unity is what we strive for when we go back to Odom Arishon Kodem HaChet. So says the Shem Yishmoel, that this is the reason why the Kohen, right, has restrictions, right, in anything which reminds us of the chet, in order to remind us constantly that his job is to overcome the chet. He has to limit himself, separate himself from death, which is the first result, and also from anything that is the result of the breakdown of human relations. What is the example of a breakdown of human relations? Gerushin. So therefore, the Kohen is to separate himself from the Gerusha only as a sign of his job, which is to overcome the sin of Adam Arishon. This is what the Shem Yishmoel says. Now, I will take it one step further. The Kohen Gadol. That the Kohen Gadol is only allowed to marry a girl between 12 and 12 and a half. Right? A virgin between 12 and... The Gemara says that it has to be not just Besula virgin, it has to be at the time of between 12 and 12 and a half. What's the idea behind it? Because, remember, in its ideal state, men and women, right, the perfect man finds the perfect woman, right? You know that Gemara talks about the Zivug, which is the perfect man finding the perfect woman, the Zivug, right? Now, the Zivug is one. It's only if we don't deserve it, we don't find our Zivug, right? So we find second best, you know, the Zivug Sheni. So third best. There is such a concept. You know that there's such a concept of Zivug Rishon. The Gemara says Zivug Rishon, according to one man, the Omar, that's destined. You're not Zoyche, so Lefi Maiso. So your actions will cause you to get somebody else. Right? Comes out that the zibuk rishon is one perfect zibuk. The idea is like this: 12 and 12 and a half, right, is the period when the girl becomes physically ready to get married. Okay? Physically, she becomes ready to get married. At that point, right, she chooses right away the Kohen Gadol. Why can't she be 14, 18? Because we are giving her a period when she has no zivug. We want to bring out the idea that the Kohen Gadol represents the perfect zivug for her. Right?
So
the idea is like this. If she spent time without a zivug, so she's not a grusha, she's not a divorcee, but she may have been thinking about other possibilities. She wasn't married to anybody. But if you take the idea of that fitting perfect marriage to an extreme, right, it means that from its beginning, right, that was the perfect marriage for her. So what's so important that he should marry the one that from the beginning she never even thought about anybody else? Why is it so important? Because it's the idea of the true zivuk. If we just want to express symbolically the idea of the true zivuk, which is one of the goals of the Kohen, to bring back everybody to its true zivuk.
You tie this in also the idea I saw in Hirsch from a couple of parshas ago, that he said that the Kohen Gadol, according to Halacha, only has one wife.
Only one wife.
And does this,
exactly.
Does this tie into
perfect.
Because in the perfect relationship you only have...
In a perfect relationship you only have one wife. Now, is the perfect... Yitzchok can only have one wife. He's too holy to have two wives. Right? In a perfect relationship there is only one wife. A Kohen Gadol is not allowed to have more than one wife. Again, to express this idea of the perfect Jew. Right.
Just a practical question. What they used to do when they picked Kohen Gadol? Obviously, they didn't pick a kid.
He was already married.
He was already married.
So usually, if he's already married, there are no restrictions. We're talking about the theoretical. If he's already married, right, she goes up with him. She becomes a relative.
Oh, so he can...
Right? Yeah. He doesn't have to divorce her. He doesn't have to divorce. We're talking about that Kohen. That he's not married yet. He has to get married.
Or as a widower?
What?
Or
as a widower.
A 50-year-old Kohen Gadol and a 12-year-old
kid? An 80-year-old Kohen Gadol man. So what's wrong?
We have to babysit him.
You are talking like a product of the 20th century.
Well, I'm thinking today. No. So
today it could be a problem.
So,
okay, it never was. When you go through the history books, right, the problem of differences in age as a problem for marriage hardly ever existed. I mean, it's a product of our value. We have to be very, very careful. Right? We have to be very, very careful asking modern questions to.
To be established today now.
Yeah,
and then we have a Kohen Gadol, and then he's gonna have to marry this 12-year-old girl, and
you see, our values will change. And the maturity, the process of maturity, will change. You know what the emojis were when they were 3 years old. Don't forget. I mean, we are living in a certain era where that became a problem, right? But not necessarily it would be so in 50 years from now. Not necessarily.
Or tomorrow.
Exactly. Take a look at the next posuk. Posuk hey. The key dashtoy.
Okay.
The key dashtoy. Posuk hey. The key dashtoy. Now, who is the Torah addressing itself to? Up to now, it was addressing itself to the Kohen. Speak to the Kohanim, speak to Aaron.
Okay.
Posuk, I'm sorry. Ches, right. I'm sorry. Ches. The Kiddashto, yes, Lechem Elokecho Humakri. So, who are we talking to? Who is the Torah talking to? Who is God talking to? Who is Moshe talking to? Well, the Kohen, impossible. You couldn't tell the Kohen, the Kiddashto, you shall sanctify him. Because he is the one who brings the korbanos after all, so you must sanctify it. So who is he talking to? Not to the Kohen, of course, but to Klal Yisrael, that you must hold them in a state of Kedusha, right? And it goes on, Kodosh Yeloch, he should be holy for you, Ki Kodosh Ani Hashem Kadishan, says Rashi, Posuk Ches, V'kidashto, Al Korcho, even if he doesn't want to, we Jews have the obligation to set up courts, that the court should carry out the laws of the Torah, that if a Kohen marries a Grusha, make sure that you keep them separated. If a Kohen wants to go into the cemetery, make sure that you don't allow him to go in. This is the Kidashto, Al Korcho. Sheim Loy Roto Ligarish, Halakeyu, Vyasreyu Ashigarish. Kodesh Yelo, he should be holy for you, says Rashi. Nohoy Boy Kedusha. Make sure that you respect it. Right? Because before there wasn't much respect in when you hit him that he should work. But here we're talking about, we're in a society, one of us is a Kohen. Make sure the Toach Rishon, you give him the first Aliyah LeTorah, right? The Toach Rishon, the Choldovor, the Vorech Rishon, the Seudo. And if somebody has to bench you, you give him to bench, it's a fulfillment of the Mitzvah Deoraisa. To give a Kohen respect, it's a fulfillment of the Mitzvah Deoraisa. Now, just want to clarify. So from where does Rashi learn out that you force him to be a good Kohen? From the word V'kidashto. How does Rashi learn out that you treat him with respect because he's a Kohen? Ki kodosh. Do you see that from Rashi clearly?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you take a look in the Torah's Kohanim, you know, the Midrash on the Vayikra is called Torah's Kohanim. It says like this, Omar Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says, V'kidashto, you shall sanctify him. You shall make sure that you show him respect. That seems to go, not like Rashi. Yeah? Not like Rashi. Now, I saw a brilliant observation from the Torah Tmimo. He says like this. He quotes from Gittin Nuntes. A very interesting observation in Gittin Nuntes. The Gemara really is in Gittin Nuntes. And the Gemara says like this. Tanya the Bay Rabbi Shmuel, again, what I just quoted to you from the Torah Scrolling is in the morning. V'kidashtoi, lechol davar shebikdusha liktoyach rishon, it should get the first aliyah, sator, whatever. Right? So, if you take a look in Rashi, now, you know how Rashi works. Rashi quotes from the Gemara, and this is usually represented. I don't know whether Rashi wrote it that way or the printer represented it that way. That is irrelevant. But somehow the printer knew, whoever was reading the manuscript of Rashi knew, that here Rashi is quoting from the Gemara. And from this point on, Rashi is giving his own explanation. So what are the signs of the quote? The sign of the quote is anything which comes before the dot. Remember, take a look at any Gemara, right? If you open up any Gemara, right, you see like this. The Gemara starts. Rashi says, then there is a dot. The dot represents that's the end of the quote and the beginning of Rashi. When Rashi finishes the quote, when Rashi finishes his explanation and a new quote starts, what is the sign? Two dots. So that's throughout. Right. Yeah? So it's a very interesting thing. When Rashi says the Kidashto, right? Rashi says the Kidashto in the Gemara here in Gittin, there is like this. I'm going to describe it. I don't want to pass it around, but the Kidashto dot. So what will start now?
Explanation.
Ki es the gomer, etc. Two dots. Ki es. What's ki es? That's the next two words of the pasuk. Kedoshim, right? I mean, kidashto, ki es. So what's Rashi doing? He's being master of the Kiddushto. Here's the difficulty. You never find any such thing. The Torah Tmimo even says, throughout Shas, you never find such a thing. He can say, I can't, but you listen. You know, it's unusual. You hear?
What's the name of
the Kiddushto?
Yes.
Dot.
And then Kia.
Ki es, etc. The Gomer, two dots. There was a skip. Liftoach Rishon. The whole Dovor Kovod, Ben Betoro, Ben Isha, whatever. That's very unusual. What's going on? Rashi had to explain the Kiddushto by adding Ki es, etc.
When the Gemara brings down the Kiddushto, does it bring down Ki es as well?
No, the Gemara doesn't.
The Gemara just says the Kiddushto.
The Kiddushto, Rabbi Shmuel says this and this and this.
You're saying he's learning it out from his father.
What?
So Rashi's saying he's learning it out from his father.
From where?
Kiddushto, Ki es.
Yeah. So what does Rashi add by saying Ki es?
It says that he specified the process. The Kiddushto, Ki es, Lachem.
But why wasn't he satisfied with the Kiddushto? What does he have to add Ki es, the Gomer, Ki es, etc.?
So why is it not possible?
Oh, so you say, well, it must be a mistake.
It's not just a mistake. It's
possible.
It's a process. Well, it was written by the printer.
What? Wouldn't that
be Rashi specify
which process? Which process? Good, but this Kiddushto is also the pasuk. I mean, what is he adding by here?
There's another pasuk that says the Kiddushto.
Why?
There's another pasuk that says the
Kiddushto. Okay, all right. Okay. I would accept it if we would, but in order to convince me of that, you would have to find, you have to look in the Concordancia, right? That you find other places where it says the Kiddushto, and then okay, then I would agree with you. But I don't know. I mean, I would have to check whether there is another Kiddushto in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe yes. I don't know. So his idea is the following. You know that this is pretty common in Shas, that sometimes the Gemara starts the beginning of a pasuk and it really means to learn out something from the end, but it doesn't bother bringing you the whole thing, so it says etc., and what it means is the end of the pasuk. Did you ever come across such a thing? That's pretty common. That's very common. Now, when you learn the Gemara and it says Vekidashto, it says Vekidashto, and from here you learn out that you must give kovod to the kohen. So you might have thought that it is from the word Kiddushto. What about if Rashi wanted to hint to you that if you are wrong, it's the end of the pasuk? So Rashi will say, "Es lechem v'gomer," which means go on to the pasuk till the end. So Rashi is really giving you an explanation. Kedoshim, end of quote. Ki es, etc. To show you that what? That it's from the end of the pasuk. Namely, which part of the pasuk?
Kodoshia.
Oh, says the Torah Mimo. Now it fits in perfectly. Because otherwise there is a contradiction between the Gemara in Gittin and Rashi in Chumash. Because Rashi in Chumash learns out honoring a kohen from which word? In pasuk Ches? Rashi in Chumash, in our parsha. From which? What? So how can Rashi contradict the Gemara?
What's the quote of Rabbi Shmuel?
What?
What's the quote of Rabbi Shmuel?
The Kiddushto, he says, the Kiddushto, you must give him kovod.
Is the
Gemara
in the Chumash?
In the Gemara?
In the Gemara?
No. No. So that's why Rashi wants to say, even though there is no Gemara in the Gemara, I want to tell you that it means
when the Gemara wants to tell you that it's going on by from the pasuk, it's
not necessarily. Not necessarily. Because many times the Gemara, the Vegoimer, the truth of the matter doesn't mean anything. Because the Vegoimer is added every time. I mean, you can't find a consistent reason when it does say Vegoimer when there isn't.
Usually
the chances are the printer, sometimes they don't like writing in the Vegoimer.
Usually the Vegoimer is put in when you
not necessarily. But one thing is things for sure. Here it isn't.
It isn't put in.
So if it isn't, it's a good reason for Rashi to tell you you should know that there should be a Vegoimer here. Right? That's what Rashi is explaining to you. Now.
So you're saying that Rabbi Shmuel is not
the thing. Right, Rabbi Shmuel is, but that's what Rashi wanted to indicate. Fine. So if so, according to this, it's a very interesting thing. But by the way, you know, there's a Pirush called Maram Shif in the back of the Gemara. Many, many, many Mesechtas, Maram Shif. Maram Shif lived about 300 years before the Torah Tmimo. He says the same thing anyway.
Oh.
But. Right? But anyway, it's good. It's excellent. It's an excellent idea. But it helps us for something else too. So it comes out here that we have two psukim, Bekidashto and Kodoshia. Now let's analyze the pasuk again. Take a look. Bekidashto, you shall sanctify him. And the Torah gives a reason. Why do you have to sanctify him? Because after all, he's lechem elokechu umakri. Yes? Because he's the one who's bringing the korbanos. So you have to be appreciative to him, or whatever it means, right? Kodoshielach ki kodoshani. And he shall be holy because I'm holy. So here there are two reasons. The first reason is you sanctify him because he brings the korbanos. He's holy because I'm holy, and he has to reflect my holiness. So it sounds like two reasons. Yes, on the surface, sounds like two reasons. Kadosh, the Kidashto, you shall sanctify him because he brings the korbanos, and he should be holy because I'm holy. So it's two reasons. Now, if you take a look in the Shulchan Aruch Kuf Chof Ches, the Shulchan Aruch brings down the Orach Chaim Kuf Chof Ches. The Shulchan Aruch brings down the issur of using a kohen to serve you. Right? You ask the kohen, pass the soul. How are you allowed to do it? You are using a kohen. That contradicts your sanctifying him. The sanctifying him is you serve him, you give him kovet. Here you are asking him to pass you the salt. How are you allowed to pass you the salt? How are you allowed to ask him to pass you the salt? He's serving you, which is the opposite of your serving him, which is the kovod. Yes? Kupchopches. Kupchopches. Mendalit. Mendalit, so the last one. Osur lishtameis bekoyen afilu bizman hazeh. You are not allowed to be served by a coin. You're not allowed to use a coin. Dehave kemoyel behekdesh. Because it says kodosh. And what happens when you take a korban and you use it for your own benefit? It's called what? Me'ilo. So using a coin is also me'ilo. What is the difference? The coin or the animal? Right. Adds the Ramo. I'm reading the Ramo, by the way. Im loy mochal al kach, unless the kohen is mochal. If he's mochal, he gives up right? So he's allowed to be mochal. Brings down the Mogen Avrom like this. Behagois Maimonios says like this. There is a story that the Magos Maimonios brings down. Masse Bekoyen, there is a story, this is in the Taz on the Ramo. The Taz on the Ramo brings down this story. Masse Bekoyen, there is a story of the Koyen, Sheyotzach Maim Al Yidei Rabbeinu Tam, that Rabbeinu Tam allowed him to bring water to wash his hands. Here, Rabbeinu Tam allowed that he should bring water to wash his hands. Hiksho Talmidecho, so a certain disciple came over to Rabbeinu Tam and asked him, Hoshoninu b'Yerushalmi, we learned in Yerushalmi, Hamishtamis b'Koyen b'Kehune Hareze Moal, you're not allowed to use a Kohen, how do you allow your disciple to bring you water? Right? V'Heishiv Rabbeinu Tam Ein Kedusha Bizman Hazeh. Nowadays there is no Kedusha. They came alone because we believe big day amaleim, when they are serving God, when there is a Beit HaMikdash, when they serve God, and I was going to bring korbanos kedushos amaleim v'loy loy. So the disciple was shocked. V'hiksho, so the disciple asked Rabbi Natan, in Cain kol minei kedushos loy le'aved lehu. So therefore, don't force him to do anything. If he wants to marry a grusha, let him marry a grusha. If you say that nowadays his grusha is not there, his holiness is not there, so let's say, so a kohen should be allowed to marry a grusha also. This is what the disciple asked Rabbi Nutta.
Just a grusha or anyone?
Anyone. I'm just giving an example. He doesn't say a grusha. He says all kinds of things that depend on his grusha. He shouldn't do anything. I mean, he should be allowed to do anything. Right? And we shouldn't have the obligation to give him first ever. Veshosak Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam had no answer. He kept quiet. That's the story of Brenda.
Where is that?
Huh?
What's
more? It's not a Gemara. That's the Taz. The Taz brings it down here in Kuchofet. From Hagois, where Hagois Maimonius in Hilchos Gittin in the Rambam. I don't know. It's not in Tosos. It's interesting. So it says like this, and then it brings down the Heishiv Rabbeinu Peter. Rabbeinu is interesting. That's a way of Rabbeinu Peter. Hey, you that's right, Rabbeinu Peter. The Nehisha Yesh Boy Kedusha. The Kedusha remains forever. But Yochoy Limcho, but it still doesn't contradict the fact that it can be Moichel. And it brought a proof that a coin can be Moichel. But I'm skipping a little bit, doesn't it? So he didn't answer anything. So what is Rabbeinu Peter answering? So mean he's arguing with Rabbeinu Tam? Not true. He was answering Rabbeinu Tam.
Maybe he's saying Bezman has died, the coin's allowed to Moichel. Bezman
but that means he wasn't allowed to be Moichel.
There's a difference what's inherent within the future of a coin
itself
and what he does. That wouldn't affect his kedusha in terms of the service of Hashem.
Okay.
If you allow.
Okay. So the Taz himself goes on to say like this. Really, im noso grusho koifinoisoi. We force it. It's only. I'm skipping a little bit. Only things he says that are something. That nichole shezochole shoreis bakoidesh, which means obviously the disciple of Rabbeinu Tam, right, had pleasure. He benefited more than Rabbeinu Tam did, right? After all, serving Rabbeinu Tam is such a great honor. So really, Rabbeinu Tam, by accepting the service, was giving him service. You hear what the Tam says? So he says like this. The reason why Rabbeinu Tam didn't answer that, he was too modest to say what is he going to answer you. Therefore, Rabbeinu Tam didn't answer because he was too modest. What he's leaving out is one very important thing. So did Rabbeinu Tam lie to him? Remember, Rabbeinu Tam gave an answer first.
In
Kedusha, he didn't say in Kedusha is going to say. You see, but he said something that on the surface sounds like he's saying in Kedusha is going to say. The point is like this, you see. Rabbeinu Tam was giving him a partial answer. The truth of the matter is there is a kedusha, right, which is only bizman that the Bigdayim Alehem, which means like this: the obligation of the Jews, right, to force a Kohen not to marry a Grusha, that specific obligation, right, only applies when the Kohanim are bringing Korbanos. Where does it say that in the Pasuk? You pay attention. What?
Mockers.
Take a look. Which is the part of the Pasuk that tells you we have the obligation to force the coin, even if we have to hit it, right?
Yes,
lechem elokecho. So the reason that the Torah gives for forcing him is yes, lechem elokecho. But there is another part of kehune. There is another part of kehune which is what the fact that you have to treat him right. Which part of the pasuk tells you that you have to treat him right? The second part, kikodeshia, that doesn't say concerning korbona, so that doesn't change bismanaze either. So for that, you have to say he was mochel, which means like this. Rabbeinu Tam didn't tell him a lie. He told him the truth, but not the whole truth. Why couldn't he say the whole truth? Because the whole truth required that he should say, yeah, listen, but he gets benefit from the fact that he's serving it. He didn't want to say it. He was too modest, which means like this. What Rabbeinu Tam says is correct, but he was telling him shut in the first part of the passage, right? V'kidashtok yislechem elokecho. That's what Rabbi Nutan was saying. That special kedusha that demands our watching out, that chatz rishon and mishun marry a grusha, that is only them, right? Because it's v'kidashtok balkon. Okay.
We don't want to marry a grusha.
What?
We don't want to marry a grusha.